risk and calculated risk. Always calculate your risk to the best of your ability, but there's always going to be unknowns that you don't have, and that's okay. When you go to start something or do something or try something new, you're not going to have all of the information to be good at it right away, but you can figure it out. Life is that way. You don't have to know steps 1 through 25. You just need to know step 1, and you can get through step 1, and then you
it'll lead you to 2.
What step 2 is.
All of the food we eat and much of the clothing we wear comes from plants and animals that are raised on farms. Farms are different in type, in size, and even in name.
Taking the jump. Yeah. And you can figure it out on the
way. It's like, what are the odds that that guy would have just walked into that office looking for a place and then secured basically my mortgage for 5 years, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah, unreal. It was
unreal.
It was the smoothest. I always tell people that deal there, it kind of ruined you guys. Because it
we
went
had
so
the first one really easy.
It went so smooth that you guys, so every Sunday dinner after we got that one ready to go and they moved in and they started and Sawyer moved in upstairs, it was like, we got to find another one. Cause it just went so good. And then, you know, they did learn things along the way.
Yeah, we did. Well, and so I'll say this too, like a lot of people talk about when you're goal setting to do habits that are very realistic or progress points that are very realistic. And so for us, what seemed really realistic financially in our market, where things aren't priced out of total proportion, things are, I would say, affordable here. When it's in the last year, it's been harder probably. But I would say we said one a year was super doable. And so 2018, we bought our first one. 2019 came around, we bought another one that came with its own challenges. And I should talk about maybe how we bought that one, because this is kind of a creative way to find real estate. So the first one, I got lucky because someone came into our office, or well, someone wanted to sell and kind of let us know. The second one, like my dad said, we were jonesing to go and impatient. So I emailed actually all of the lenders around here and I said, hey, I was like, if you have anything that's going to go into foreclosure, let me know. And I might be interested in buying it, because for a bank, it's easier to sell a property than to go into foreclosure on it. It doesn't cost them as much and they don't lose money. So right. Hills Bank reached out to me pretty shortly thereafter and said, hey, we have this property. It's going to go into foreclosure if we don't just do a private sale on it. So why don't you talk to the guy? I did. We learned a lot on that house. I mean, as you can imagine, like a foreclosure house, it was about what you would picture it to be.
Shitty tenant.
Yep.
Had to evict her because, and we were trying to be as nice as you could. Nice as you can, but some people are just difficult.
Well, it was a perfect storm because you had the former owner of the house that was probably involved in malicious activity.
Everything you think that could go wrong went wrong with this property.
Yep.
Pretty much.
Pretty much.
So that one was hard.
But we got it.
I was stressed out of my mind that summer when we were doing that. Mm-hmm. It was terrible.
Hey, but here's a lesson. I think I can throw this out. A lesson that you learned that I didn't know was because you guys ended up having to evict the tenant, remember the lawyer said that he said that any because you have to go. What was the deal? You had to go before the judge to get it done.
To go to court.
Yeah, you had to go to court to get that done. And the lawyer said, "Oh yeah, I always try to get these scheduled for first thing in the morning during the week, because usually people who aren't going to pay the rent have a hard time getting out of bed, and they probably won't make it to the court thing."
That's a good lawyer.
And sure enough, they didn't even show up to contest it. And he's like, yeah, usually if you have them early in the morning, they're not going to contest it.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah, it is crazy.
And that stuck with me. I was like, oh, yep, good to know.
So anyway, we bought that one. That one was a whole deal.
It's up and going now, though.
Yep,
we got it.
It's great. And I'll say this, too. I pride myself on this. Other than just evicting that person and doing a lot of work on that house, we don't have vacancy. there is such a need for quality places to live. If you just put a little bit of elbow grease and put a nice coat of paint on something, you're going to make it look nicer than a lot of landlords are out there.
Clay is also very good at
the details.
The details, home decor.
Our mom
is super, that's her talent. She's very gifted. She's always been able to do it. And Clay is, he's pretty damn close to her level. I mean, probably not, but you're damn good at it. You know, you can go into a place and kind of be like, this would look good, this good, this color paint.
This has got to go.
This has got to be here, you know. And so, yeah, I would 100% agree with that. I mean, every single place that we've got, we've had to put sweat equity in. Mm-hmm. Just damn near.
We're almost out of that phase, yeah. I think. Thank God.
Continue, though.
So, second one in 2019, third one in 2020. And that's kind of, I moved into the third one that we did while we decided to kind of like fix it up. And we were going to just do it as a rental. And at that time, Sawyer was really, this is kind of what I like about Sawyer and my dad. They're both such research junkies and YouTube junkies. Like, I talk about how that season of life where I was like reading all the business books, reading Rich Dad Poor Dad. I've just let off the gas a little bit because you guys are so like, you're just so good. And so, yeah, Sawyer's like, we need to Airbnb this. And I was like, okay, well, you know, tell me why. And we talked about it. And sure enough, I was like, well, let's give it a try. It wasn't going to hurt. We always knew we could rent the house if it didn't work with Airbnb, but
because you were moving and you got it fixed up.
Yep. I lived in it. We fixed it up. And then, we got an opportunity to just move somewhere else. And which I don't know, we can go into that or not, but
oh yeah,
still here in town. Well, God, it's just another one of those crazy stories. Okay. So around this time, mom had been kind of expressing interest in doing a business. And she had told me even like, keep your eye out for stuff that's going to come onto the market, like commercial spaces. And, I did, but like, it didn't click with me. This property came on the market, downtown Washington, beautiful. Like the guy that did the work was a tiler, so beautiful tile and updated everything. It's like this New York loft, basically, in Washington, Iowa. And the main level was a beautiful commercial office space, but like with exposed brick and just all sorts of cool features. Just so completely unique property. It is not super cookie nice. Cutter at all.
Mm-mm. Yep.
And she sends me a like Zillow link. She's like, I want to go look at this. And I'm like, oh, okay. So anyway, she's like, they buy it and she puts her store in there and she's like, well, why don't you guys live? And so we decide, well, we're going to move into that because it's really nice.
This upstairs apartment is super nice.
Yeah. I mean, it kind of worked out. It's one of those things. Sometimes stuff just works out because we've been kicking around the idea. My wife had a store for about 12 years. And when Sawyer was when they were both still in high school, she got to the point where it wasn't that much fun anymore. And they were in a lot of stuff and she didn't want to have to, she was just kind of over it. So she sold her business and closed that store and she's enjoyed that. But, now she kind of had the bug to get back into, home decor and she loves decorating. And this came along and it just so happened that it was at the same time that the house was finished and they're like, well, if we're going to Airbnb it, we're going to have to find someplace else to go. And what was unique about the building that we bought was that the apartment in it had been an Airbnb. And so it was fully furnished and it was very well done. And when I looked at it, I'm like, I'm not moving all this stuff. I don't want to move a bunch of stuff up here and make it work. And the house, they would have had to leave it furnished to make it Airbnb. So basically, for them to move, they'd have to buy all the stuff. So we made the offer to just buy this building with everything there. So we bought it with the apartment fully furnished, right down to the plates in the drawer.
The towels.
Yeah, the towels, everything. We bought it with everything. And we needed somebody to rent the upstairs. And we thought, well, heck, it's a perfect deal. So they moved in there and Trisha opened her store and that enabled them to have a fully furnished Airbnb, and that's how it got started. So,
yeah. I mean, we're lucky in some ways, and in other ways, I feel like, I mean, here's the deal. Every like big stride I feel like I've made, it's been 50% me. And I also feel like I had help though with everything. And I think that's something important to like,
can't do it all by yourself. No, you any business you do, I don't care. And you, this is information that I've learned from high level entrepreneurs. If you want a successful business, you cannot do it all by yourself.
Yeah.
If you really want to scale it, I mean, that's where you got to go.
So every interaction that you have with people is important, because you never know when a relationship, a conversation, an introduction, a connection you have will pay you dividends.
People is what matters.
Yep.
100%. No matter what business you're in, people matter. Okay, so Clay moves from the Airbnb that we turned into an Airbnb to Dad's apartment that your mom and dad's building, that is the apartment they live there now. And
okay, so this is where it goes crazy. Okay, this is like, I talked about compound interest. I mentioned it briefly earlier, but this is where real estate gets really fun. And I didn't realize it when I started. What we'd been doing to buy every property was we had partnered with a bank that we liked, and we just paid 10% down. And everything cash flowed. Everything we bought
made money after all expenses. Didn't just make money.
Didn't just break even. It always cash flowed, and that was kind of like a criteria that I would have.
And if you're somebody that's interested in buying real estate, that is the number one thing you need to look at. I mean, obviously the condition of the property, but if you're not going to make money after all your expenses are paid, do not buy that property.
Absolutely, yeah. Because absolutely has to be.
I know that's a kind of an obvious thing, but. I've had questions from people that are like, well, so do you just wait till the property's paid off to make money?
Right.
No.
And every month. We'll talk. We can get into the nitty gritty of that too later.
Okay.
And I remember like in the first couple and 3 years, I would like go on these drives and I would like calculate out in my head 20 years in the future. Like, okay, if we grow at the rate we're growing now at this rate, I'm like, well, that's not even that much money. I mean, it probably would be, but I'm like, I want more. Well, what I didn't realize at the time, real estate's so interesting because you are paying it off as you go. Your tenants are paying it off for you. So every year that passes, I have what's called more equity that I'm paying off in the property. So what I owe to the bank is less. And then real estate also appreciates value over time, right? So things get more expensive, like a house for $100,000 2 years ago is probably honestly worth like $130,000 or $125,000. Now, just because the market's crazy. So, and if you put sweat equity into stuff, that further increases the value to crazy levels.
Sweat equity is just work. So, Make it look nicer.
So you buy a house that needs some work, you paint it, you fix the windows, you put down a new floor, you put new appliances in it. So when you're done with it, even if you buy it and you haven't paid much down on it, because you cleaned it up, made it better, it's worth more. So that's sweat equity.
Get the appraiser to come out and look at it.
Yeah.
And that automatically gives you more equity because it's worth more.
So what we had done was mostly just that sweat equity model.
Cash.
Yep, pay with cash. Well, what I didn't realize, and this is where Sawyer, being a research guru that he is, was like, there's a better way to do this. And he's like, you use existing equity to buy more property. And so we looked into it and it was very true. Like my first building, we bought it for $95,000, but there were comparables that had sold for $195,000 in this crazy market. So I went to the bank and I said, here's the deal. I have a property that I think can sell for basically $200,000. And so that creates $100,000 that isn't being utilized here. Why don't you let us, well, I was a little more polite than that, but I was like, can we use this money, this $100,000 that I could get out of selling it, to buy another one? Yes. Well,
a whole new world.
Are you going to come up with, how does anyone come up with $100,000 today? No.
Unless you don't. Save your ass off.
That's where we started getting into more big ticket items. Mm-hmm. It's because we had, not just 100, because we had 3 properties that we had accrued value on. So probably 152.
All these, put sweat equity in. Increase the value there. Another way you can get increase equity is if you
increase rents.
You get more income from the property, you get more equity that way. And then also if you just pay it down. So when we figured this out,
it's a triple storm.
Yeah, we have three properties and we figured this out. It was like, holy shit.
And to be frank, this was 3 years after starting our company. I'm going to use the word exploded because now we're growing at 100% year over year.
Using equity is like just putting your foot on the gas pedal.
Well, it's using, there's different ways to look at it, but in reality, you explained it very well because a lot of people don't realize that money, that value that's sitting in that property.
It's just sitting there. It's not doing anything.
It's kind of like money in a bank that you're not getting any interest on if you're interested in growing. Now, if you're just interested, if you are at a point where you just want to pay something down because you want to have it paid off, then that's totally fine. But for you guys wanting to grow, that basically is like having money sitting in a savings account that you're getting paid 0.011% on, mm-hmm. and you're able to unlock that to put it to work for you. And the other thing I think people don't understand is, you know, there's a certain amount of people that, oh, that's risky, but you're not taking that money and buying something that has no value.
You're gonna, if we're gonna use the equity, which we did, yep. it was going to be another good investment that was gonna make us money every single month. It wasn't gonna be a non-cash flowing asset.
So then you buy a property and that property has value. So that it's not that that money, it's not that that equity is like
buying a car.
Yeah, you're not buying a depreciating asset. You're buying a appreciating asset.
One thing that you also figure out if you read Robert Kiyosaki's Rich Dad Poor Dad is he talks about assets over liabilities, and real estate is an asset. If you buy real estate, it's an asset. Your truck is a liability. Your house that you live in is a liability because you're not making anything on the money.
But I would actually argue you can use it as an asset. If there are people listening to this now who bought $100,000 to $150,000 house 5 to 10 years ago, that is first of all accrued value. And if they want to invest in real estate, they have equity to play with.
Right, right. Definitely.
They really do. I mean, you can get, this is a great piece of advice. So we're really fortunate to work with the bank we work with.
Yeah, I was going to say this.
So a lot of people, like it boggles my mind. There are a lot of banks out there that are like, nope, we require 20% down on every single property. And we're not going to budge on that. And we're not going to budge on the interest rate and blah, 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 blah. Well, the bank we work with has always only required 10, which has been a lifesaver.
And I feel like they knew we were young in the game and they respected that. And they wanted us to treat us well.
And here's the other thing. So like if you go to buy a property, your realtor is going to tell you your closing costs are going to be about $3,000, $2,000 to $3,000, depending on the bank you work with. More sometimes. So every time you get a property, most banks require what's called an appraisal. So you have to pay this appraiser to come in and value the property so that the bank can make sure that you're not overpaying for it so they don't lose their butt if you go into foreclosure. Kind of complicated, but basically you're having to pay an appraiser to come and do this thing.
To verify the value,
yep. So our bank... No appraisals. Do you know how lucrative that is in a real estate offer? Most people probably don't, but it's a really nice feature. It puts your offer well ahead of other people. So I recommend that if you're trying to get into real estate investing, you don't look at these big banks who are like the most amazing banks that are most well known. Look at really credible banks that have been around a long time. That are local and who you can build a personal relationship with the lender, because
this is like the Sunday dinner right here. Everyone's going,
yep. Everybody's got their finger up.
So, but here's the deal. We really have built a relationship with this bank, right? So we've been in business probably 18, 19, 20, 21, 22. This is our fifth year. And we've never missed a mortgage payment. And we have, you know, X number of properties now. The bank we're in the bank's good graces. I mean, we're good borrowers. We make them money because we pay interest every month on the properties. They know that we're probably a decent bet as far as lending goes. So
right.
having that, there are things that they offer us that are just amazing as far as like that no appraisal.
It's that rural
cheap closing costs. Mm-hmm.
It's that rural kind of local bank thing, you know. Yep. They trust, they want people in the community to succeed. They want to see the community grow. They want to see good happening in the community. And one other thing I wanted to say before you chime in with your finger up, because I know you want to get a word out. A lot of people, you were talking about people say it's risky to use equity. And there's a story, Dave Ramsey again, he always talks about good debt, or he says all debt's bad. Don't ever have debt. Don't ever have debt. And he always, if you know why he says that, the reason why he says that is he was doing exactly what Clay and I were doing, where he
had like $2
million. $2 million borrowed, and he was investing in real estate like crazy. He was using equity that he had built up in his properties and just going on the offense, going on the offense, going on the offense. And he went,
and that bank went under
super hard. The bank that he was banking with went under, and I guarantee you.
Well, that's what happened. They called the notes in.
Called the notes in, and they wanted, hey, buddy, we need your $2 million you owe us. And he was like, I don't have the $2 million that I owe you. And then he lost his ass. That's why it's really, really important to not only build a really good relationship with the bank, but probably bank at a local bank, not Chase Bank, not U.S. Bank, you know, local banks that have your best interest in mind and value the relationship.
And I'll say this too, as a realtor, ex-realtor, well, I'm licensed still. I just don't do it actively. We hated when people would come in and they were approved by Wells Fargo or U.S. Bank, because it's a corporate bank. There, you cannot get someone on the phone there easily to work with. And I frankly don't think that their terms and their service help you as a home buyer. Seriously, the right. best banks that you could bank with around here are Hills Bank or a local bank, or Green State's pretty good too, like mm-hmm. credit union around here.
And you got to also think in the bank's situation. If shit hit the fan, are they going to call in the people's loans that make them the most money? Or are they going to hold off on those people? Like, let's be real. Like, if shit hit the fan tomorrow, whose loans are they going to call in?
I also want to talk a little bit about something else. So this is a fear that I had, not this specific fear, but working in a real estate office, you hear a lot of stories about people who invest in real estate. And there was an agent who I worked with, and she was investing in stuff, and 08 hit, the recession in 08. And people weren't selling houses, so the real estate income was just ass, and they were not going to be able to make some mortgage payments on their rentals. I liken it to like being in school and like not getting your homework done. And like, if you're a good student in school and you go to your teacher and you say, here's the deal, I had this come up, can I just get an extension on the homework? 99% of teachers are going to say, if you're a good student and have been respectful, yes, you're going to get an extension on the homework. Banks are just like that teacher. So she went in there and she said, hey, she's like, we can't make a payment this month or the next 2 months or maybe even the next 3 months. What if we just throw those payments onto the end of the life of the loan, extend the life of the loan just a little bit, and
let me get by
here. And you know what they did?
And that probably wouldn't happen at corporate.
Nope.
No.
Local.
What you're talking about is, I feel like it's super, like that is important for, I don't care if you're a real estate investor or whether you just have your home mortgage or whether you're a farmer and you have your operating loan, whatever. Like what happened to Dave Ramsey when they said, hey buddy, you got to pay this. It wasn't hey buddy, because the people that he dealt with, they weren't the ones he was dealing with, because the bank went under. Right. And the problem with corporate banking is whoever you're dealing with, one, chances are you can't deal with one person for everything. And two, those people come and go. And three, they usually aren't that concerned about the community that you're, like you may be banking and that bank isn't even in the community that you live in. So the value of a local bank is immense. I don't care what facet of life that you're in, because they want to, their life is like, it depends on the people in that community. So they want people that are going to better that community. And a lot of these banks, when they hire somebody, most of them stay. they're going to be there for a long time. I mean, not 100%. You get some turnover, but for the most part, they are. And it's a chance to build a relationship with somebody that is mutually beneficial, because you make them money and they help you achieve your goals. And you just really can't put a value on having a team. And I feel like that's something that the older you get, like, you guys are lucky that you've learned that as you have. But as I've gotten older, having a lawyer that I know that I have a relationship, having a financial planner that I know, having an accountant, having a banker, having a group of people that know your business that you interact with, and when it's all said and done, it's not about who necessarily gives you the cheapest per hour or will do your tax return for the bottom dollar. It's the quality of the advice that you get and
who
the
has
quality,
my best interest in mind.
Those people, man,
it's valuable.
You can't put a value on it.
I'll say this too. Like, our interest rates, they're not the lowest that I could get, but there's so much other value that our bank provides us that it's worth it to me to go there. Because here's the deal. On the third property we bought, I was desperate. I was living at home, had gone through a terrible breakup, end of my rope, low, low point in my life. Hard, hard thing. And this property came up on Zillow like 8 o'clock in the morning. I woke up, I opened my phone, I clicked on this property. I said, there's probably smokers in there. It probably all smells like smoke, but I got to go look at it anyway because the price is so right. Because I was an agent, I got in there within 30. Well, I came downstairs. I said to Dad, I said, I'm going to look at a house. You want to come? Yeah. So because I was an agent, I scheduled the showing. It was vacant. I scheduled the showing literally like an hour later, got there. Dad and I went through it. Oh, the bones were just amazing. It so just good. Needed to be ripped out. The carpet.
Sweat equity.
Just a little sweat equity. We finished looking at it. I called the bank. I was able to meet with them by 11:30 a.m. I started on the offer already because I knew how to write one, and I had an offer to them by 1 o'clock, and it had been on the mortgage, been on the market like 4 hours.
With a personal note.
Yes, with a well-written personal note to the buyer.
Yeah,
or to the seller.
Well, the writing. I'm a good writer, so I like putting those on. Your realtor's gonna It's discriminatory now to put a love letter on to your offer. That's what the Realtor Association's saying now, because it gives you an unfair competitive advantage. But I'm sorry, I'll take whatever competitive advantage I can get in this world. It's hard. So anyway, your realtor probably won't do it for you now, but they may if you ask them. Anyway, and that's the other thing. Like, just being in real estate, I learned what a good offer looks like. Like, oh God, I hate when people go to buy a house and they're like, well, I want this, 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 and this, and this, 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 and this. I'm like, dude, they've got something you want and you're like demanding all of these things.
Yep. The cleaner you can
make it easy for them. I don't know. You talk about this quote. Who's the guy that owned that basketball team in Texas? He's on Shark Tank.
Oh, Mark Cuban.
My dad always talks about Mark Cuban and how he says, I've overpaid for every asset I've ever bought. And it's so true. Yep. Because like, if you want it, heck, I'll give you whatever. I mean, what do you want? Like, yeah. if it's already a good deal, like, I'm willing to make it worth the while for the seller.
That building that we bought, that mom and I bought, is a perfect example. Some people would look at that and say that we overpaid for it. But you know what? Here's the thing. And, you know, it is anybody that lives in a small town knows there's a lot of these buildings are really old. A lot of them are really bad shape. We literally went in that. Everything that needed to be done had been done. I mean, everything had been redone.
The opposite of sweat equity.
Yeah, it was the opposite. But we're in a different place. Yeah, we're in a different place than what you guys are.
Turnkey.
For me, I'm too busy working on all your crap to worry about working on mine. And I just was like, when Trisha had her first shop, there was a lot of sweat equity that went into that. And I just wanted, like, I wanted it done. And the other thing was, when I looked at it, I was like, we can have this up and running like ASAP. And it just worked. And so the offer that we made, we could have haggled over it, but the market was starting to heat up at that point. And I was like, I knew that there was people that were going to come gunning because there just aren't enough properties that are in that good a shape. And so we got it. And you know what? In the long run, the difference between what I paid for it and what I possibly could have haggled out of it, is nothing. I mean, it's nothing over the life of having it.
Yeah, so we just went really in-depth on equity and everything. So pretty much figure that out after the third property, right?
We figured out a good handle.
The research was, you know, you just listen to people and you're good like, talk. Man, you know, podcasts, everything. You're just like, man, these guys are going so fast. How are they going so fast? How are they doing this? They must be rich. No, they're just smart and they know how to use money and equity.
Yeah, a guy that I enjoy, actually, Sawyer knows this guy too. He's a realtor and he says, OPM, other people's money. That's how you grow.
That's the other thing. There's equity and then there's other people's money. If you can buy a deal with other people's money.
So let's talk about then our last deal. So basically, we'll rush through. So remember I said one property a year? That kind of like got overstepped.
Once we figured out this method.
We've been doing a couple per year now.
So
the last couple of years. So
2020, bought the Airbnb.
We bought the Airbnb in 2020. And then in 2021, we bought our first multi-unit apartment complex. And that was really nice because it was pretty much turnkey, built in the 70s, but it doesn't need a lot. It's nice enough. And then we bought what is going to be our second Airbnb. And this one, sweat equity, a lot of sweat equity in that one. But this one, this property we're working on now, we don't really need to talk about it that much. But we bought a historic old house to turn into an Airbnb because we thought it would be really, really cool. And that's, you know what, that's part of life is just doing projects that you think are cool. It probably has slowed us. No, it hasn't slowed us down because we have other opportunities that have come up. But it's requiring a lot, and I think it'll pay off in the long run. I probably wouldn't do it again, but we're enjoying this project a lot. So, yeah. Anyway, so really, yeah, now we've just kind of figured it out, and we've identified our next property, and it's going to be a couple more Airbnbs and other things. It's like a strip mall, basically.
Yeah. And yeah, it's a different way of financing than equity. We're not going to really go in detail about it, but
not on this one. Maybe in the future.
We'll talk about it, but it's different than using equity and anything else. But the amount of ways you can get creative with investing in real estate, it's just really, there's nothing out there like it. There just truly isn't. It's just an amazing way to store wealth and grow and become financially free for anybody. If anyone would ask me, and this isn't financial advice, but the number one investment a person can make, and it depends on the person on how far you want to take your real estate business, right? But having a few properties to just be financially free, what's that worth to you? You don't have to go to the freaking moon with it.
Right.
But, you know, I encourage anybody to get into real estate. It's not easy all the time. You can look at it as a risk, but if you're buying the right properties at cash flow, there's your retirement right there. If you're somebody that just wants to get 5 properties, 10 properties, pay them off, don't have to, you know, rely strictly on your 401k when you hit 65. Oh God, I hope this lasts me till I'm dead and gone.
You talked about starting early, and it is important to start early, but it's not, starting is the important thing, because I'll tell you, and it's a little, what I've done is a little bit different in the fact that most of my real estate is ag real estate. But those hog buildings, when I built those hog buildings, I thought that was, I was building those as an income from raising the pigs. But what I didn't realize is I now have, because they're paying off, I have all this equity. They're just like giant rental houses is what they are. And because we're farming, it works really, really well for making your farm operation go, because now you have that equity that you can use. You can take that money and you can use it however you need to make things go.
Here's the problem with agriculture, though. It's not like buying a it's not like buying an apartment complex, because if you buy the right apartment complex and you run the numbers and you know it cash flows well.
Yep.
Buying land today, you're not going to cash flow land. I don't care what it is.
Nope.
I mean, land prices are absolutely insane. So if you use equity to go buy land, you better have enough cash flow throughout your farm so that you can make that payment on the piece of ground that you leveraged and used an equity and got with, you know?
Yeah, land is more of a, it's almost like buying gold or buying Bitcoin. Mm-hmm. Land is a store of wealth. So if you're somebody and you've got quite a bit of money invested in stocks or bonds or a 401k and you're worried about where the market's going, buying land is a hedge against that because it's going to hold its value even if we have a downturn. But the days of being able to buy a farm and the farm paying its own way, and all those days are gone because the value has gotten so high and yet the return per acre has not changed that much. No. So anyway, we're getting off.
Yeah, that's if I strongly recommend if you use equity, buy a cash flowing asset. Yeah. If Dad wanted to use his equity to go buy more hog barns or build another hog barn,
that works
because the hog barn will cash flow.
Right.
Better than a piece of ground would.
Right.
But it's really hard in farming to necessarily use equity.
Yep.
Because I don't recommend using equity to buy a depreciating asset.
Yeah, and to go off of what you said, Dad, too, I feel like everything I bought so far, I never know how I'm going to use it in the future or how it's going to benefit me in the future. But they just always do. And it surprises you in ways that you don't even realize can come to fruition back when you make the initial leap. That's just been the case on everything.
And that's the beauty of the real estate side of it is it's so flexible.
Yeah.
Like
there's
so many ways to use that.
And I feel like we've kind of figured out what our long-term kind of formula is going to be from here on out.
Yeah, well.
I mean, you could talk about it. We've done single family. We got our first apartment complex. We've done an Airbnb. And we like two out of three of those things more than the other one.
It's crazy to think we, in some ways, our portfolio is diverse because we have commercial, single family, multifamily.
Mm-hmm. And Airbnb.
I don't even know what you call a hospitality commercial, I guess.
Short-term rental.
Mm-hmm. Long-term, short-term, multi, yeah. And we're kind of figuring out what we like. I love the Airbnb side of it. Oh, mm-hmm. It's so fun. It is fun.
Yep.
And what I like about Airbnb too is, you know, you have tenants who live in a house and they ideally you're going to find a tenant that's going to treat that house really well. And they exist because I've had them. I've had mostly those tenants. But you also run the risk of a tenant really, really trashing it. And with Airbnb, what I just love is that I have me or a cleaner that comes in there once a week, twice a week, and they clean that thing and they make sure everything's good and it's easy to get in there and see what regular maintenance needs to happen. Mm-hmm. It keeps the value of the house intact, I think.
So we tried Airbnb at that house that Clay moved out of that we did all the work in, right? Tried the Airbnb. Clearly it worked because we're still doing it. And what we figured out is like, okay, if we're going to buy single family and we can't turn it into a Airbnb, it's not worth buying it because Airbnb can, if you do a well enough Airbnb, it can double the amount of income that you would make if you long-term rented it out.
And what I love about multifamily over single family is, so let's say I have four single family houses and I have one multifamily house. My multifamily house can house as many people as my four houses, but I have one foundation, one roof, and it's all in one spot. Four furnaces are in one spot. It's all over. Whereas if I have four houses, they're all over the board. You might have to go 5 minutes, 10 minutes, 15 minutes from house mm-hmm. to house to house. And it just eats your time and resources up. That's what we've learned in doing this. I think single family is a super great starter for like your first two, maybe even three properties, just because you can get in so easily. Like a multifamily unit is just, the buy-in is so hard mm-hmm. if you don't have that existing equity already.
Right.
So single family is fine to start, and I even encourage people.
Yeah, I mean, if you, like I said, if you're somebody like that wants to go into real estate, but you don't want to go to the moon with it, having five single family homes and managing those, probably manageable. But if you want to go pretty far with real estate and you want to scale, you got to manage all those properties. And if they're all single family, you got 100 units and they're all single family, you're going to be running around with a chicken with your freaking head cut off because you're going to be running around like crazy.
You get to a point where you start having so many things that you have to pay and fix, and there you have so many things vying for your attention as you grow that the more you can simplify, the easier it's going to make your life and the better you're going to do your job. And that's why we're going to, I mean, as we're going forward, we're going to more do multifamily and Airbnb.
Yeah. And it's a learning curve. And I feel like a lot of people probably would echo what you guys have talked about. I think, you know, a lot of people, look, the one single family you got, you learned a ton off of that because it wasn't the best experience and it's good now, but you learned a lot from that. But you got to get your feet wet, and it's a lot easier to get your feet wet on a single family. But I feel like most people, well, maybe not most, but it just makes sense as you go and you see how it works and you learn things, people are naturally drawn to multifamily stuff. And then why don't you comment though about Airbnb is everywhere. Like if you're on TikTok or you're on Instagram or whatever, there's all these people that are doing Airbnb. And I think a lot of people look at that, and if they have a rental, they're like, oh yeah, I can do that. But it's not the same. Like having an Airbnb is not the same as having a rental. And there are things that you have to consider because what's the time difference between owning a single family home or a single family rental or have an Airbnb?
What do you mean time difference?
Like how much more time does it take? And then the other thing is, what do you have to think about if you're going to Airbnb something versus if you're going to rent it?
Yeah. So obviously the expectation of what people expect out of a rental and versus a place they're going to come stay for a weekend or a week is vastly different. You need to have, if hotel. You're going to do an Airbnb, you need to be thinking of basically a very nice hotel that you've stayed at, what you liked about it, and how you can put your own twist on it, honestly. Because here's what hotels suck at. You tell me the difference between a room at a Hilton Garden Inn and like a Fairfield Inn. I can't really tell you the difference. They have the like bland paintings and the boring carpet and the sheets and like all the stuff. It's the same room. You're getting the same experience at every hotel, and you have to do it with all these other guests. People are choosing Airbnb because creative people are doing this. They get to do fun things like a really cool build out fire pit, or they get to put an Airbnb in a tiny home or an A-frame house or a tree house. And I'm not saying you need a tree house, but there are things you can do in every house to make it an experience and unique for visitors. So basically what I'm saying is you're not in the home, providing a home for people to live and mess up in industry anymore. You're in the tourism industry. You're in the hospitality business, and you need to be thinking about what your guests need, what they want, and what they don't know they want when they're coming to stay with you. Mm-hmm. And that's going to make all the difference.
The other thing is he nailed that. If we had a bomb button, we'd hit it. We need to get that bomb button.
I know.
The other thing I just wanted to say was, We try to treat the tenants the same way, but like, because they matter too. Like, I don't want people to get the wrong idea.
Not at all. I just think the expectation is different. Right. Obviously, you're not in a small town, even too, like doing a house. I'm not going to put all of these really amazing amenities in it for a tenant. I'm just not.
A tenant is renting a house and they're moving their stuff in it and they're making it their home. A B&B, those people are using all of your stuff. So it's furnished, and you're going to get the comments like, it's the little stuff. It's like when we went to Waco, it was so nice. We went in there and they had the charging cords for our phones. They had, I can't remember what else it was that they had that we thought was neat that I wouldn't have even thought of. But that little wow factor, that's what people are looking for. And you know, a tenant, it's just different because they're renting a place and they're going to make that their home. The Airbnb guest, they're literally, you're providing everything.
And I want to talk a little bit too about, this doesn't get talked about, the kind of people who actually book an Airbnb. This is a consumer who is tech savvy, forward thinking. They're probably a very clean person.
They want something different,
and they're gonna respect that space. You're getting, frankly, you're getting a higher income earner on an Airbnb who's gonna go in there to that space and stay in that space than whoever's just gonna pull up at the American in your town and stay there. You just are.
Right.
It's a different consumer, and I think that plays to the benefit of the hosts on Airbnb because, you know, I've talked to bed and breakfast owners who get bookings from all over. Like you can book them off of like the hotel sites, like booking.com. You can book them really from VRBO, from Airbnb. And he said, without a doubt, sorry, Verbo, Sawyer always gets mad at me for saying VRBO. Put in the comments. Look at me doing your job. Put in your comments whether you say VRBO or Verbo. I don't know how you're going to verbalize that in writing. But
if you think it's VRBO, all caps. If you think it's just Verbo, just
lowercase.
Lower capital V, but nothing else.
I've just literally always heard VRBO.
I've only heard Verbo. So Airbnb, it just trumps.
I just hear you two argue about it.
My point is, that guy told me, he said the best kept tenants that you're going to get are Airbnb. Most respectful, always with it, communicative, they're Airbnb because that's the tech platform. I don't know. That's my opinion.
I feel like we're here though. So we might as well, no, we got to backtrack. Okay. So this whole time, Clay sold real estate and we invested and we took you on our investment journey here. We're getting there. You're getting there, figuring out the plan, learn. We jumped, we did all that. At the same time, real estate, although it is, it's become, I mean, it's your side hustle, but it's pretty much a full-time job. I mean, it really is, right? But you're doing something else too, and it's not selling real estate anymore. So what are you doing now? How'd you transition and all that good stuff?
This is such a weird story for me to tell. And I struggle to tell it every time in a way that makes sense to people, because I think literally people go, so wait, you were selling like all this real estate and then you decided to quit real estate to like take pictures. The realtors even look at me like, are you serious? Like, why? And sometimes I even like ask myself that, to be completely honest. But here's the best way I can like make it out. It's not one factor that I made this decision over. I had done real estate for a couple years, and one thing that I know, first of all, I wasn't sure. My breakup was so devastatingly terrible for me in that period of my life that it destroyed my performance at work. It made me question where I wanted to live, what I wanted to do next. And I just didn't know what I wanted to do. And on the other flip side of the coin, I was seeing real estate agents all over the board in different offices who, just like that realtor from Compass that I talked with, it's a very all-consuming and demanding job. It is sales. You have to be on all the time with people. And people need a lot from you and they expect a lot from you. And I think just at that point in my life where I had personal stuff going on that was just very difficult, and I also had clients expecting a lot of me, it just wasn't going to work for me anymore. And I was, I hate to say it, kind of burned out even after like 2 years.
And at the same time, we have these rentals. So it's not like you're just selling real estate. You got this business that you're doing on the same time.
So really the answer is I just needed to rest. I just literally needed space to just figure out what I wanted to do next and honestly just mentally heal and work on that part of it. And so I left my brokerage and I just started thinking about like what I could do next. And I happened to like come across some people who had done real estate photography around the country, in different markets. And it was pretty lucrative. I mean, if you can figure out how to do it, it pays the bills. You know, like I make as much taking real estate photos as I did in my first year of real estate. And I'm on my second year of real estate photos. So, it pays the bills. It's not what I want to do forever. Here's the thing though. It has actually paid off really well. It fits into what we do. Like I've learned about how to market a property better. So like for all of our Airbnbs, the pictures are just immaculate.
Phenomenal.
And I know exactly how to do it and how to do it well. And the other part that's so great about it is real estate agent versus real estate agent. Generally, not always, there's a lot of ego involved because you're trying to outsell each other all the time. And real estate agents don't always talk to each other candidly, unless you're in the same office. Well, what's kind of happened is I've met all of these real estate agents from all these different offices. And so I'm able to take kind of a vast survey of a broader market of real estate, what things are selling for, how fast they're selling, what the market's like. And also what I'm starting to realize, because I think Sawyer's and my goal is we want to expand outside of this market just for diversification purposes. And because we'd like to have a house in Arizona that we can go to for 7 days out of the year to start, be really nice. It's everyone's dream. But we're probably going to need an investor for that. And so I've just been thinking, like, I know all of these people who probably invest in real estate themselves, they're older, they're an older clientele and they want a hands-off investment. You know, these are, I'm just saying it's a very well-connected clientele, who has a lot to offer you if you're an entrepreneur.
And there's less competition. I mean, there's very few people that are actually doing this business in the area that we live in.
Yeah, definitely.
And I mean, you know, the it's like Dad, you were kind of the same way. You've known the hog business. Mm-hmm. You didn't venture out of it.
Right.
You know what you know. You just did right. different things inside of it. And I think you've done that. You've done that very well too. You know the business on three fronts very, very well. And you, after you do those three fronts, you're going to meet a ton of people.
Yeah. And the connections that you've made. And I mean, that's basically what you alluded to, is now you have, instead of having an adversarial relationship, you have a very cordial relationship with a much wider group yeah. of realtors.
And you're not dancing with
yeah.
other realtors at different brokerages because you're no longer a realtor. I mean, you still got your license, but you're not at a brokerage, you know?
Right.
So they're a lot more engaged to open up and talk to you, not like they probably wouldn't have before when you were an agent.
Sure.
So that's cool.
Yeah, definitely. They feel more comfortable for sure.
Yeah. So you went in depth about, you saw people doing this, it was lucrative. And so how did you figure out how to do it? How did you get into it and like say, yeah, I'm doing that?
It was just, the timing was really there. COVID had just hit to the point where everybody was going into lockdown. Even in Iowa, we went into like a month long or 3 week or two. I don't remember, but I'm not the kind of person who likes to sit still. I mean, I like to relax. Let's not be wrong, but I can't go that long without I'm very much of a mental learner. I like to keep my mind busy. So I was like, well, I'm going to learn how to do something while we're in lockdown. Cause I'm not going to, there's people who went into lockdown and are probably still in lockdown. And all they've done probably the whole time is
consume a lot of Netflix
on Netflix. Right. Well, this was a point when I said, I'm going to take this time and learn a new skill to propel me forward after this is all over. And it did. And it has. So I took an online course. I literally took an online course that told you how to do the whole business model. It took me a long time to figure out. There was a lot of vulnerability involved. Like the first agent that ever messaged me and said, do you do video? I'd never done a video, didn't know how to do video. It was definitely like a part in the course that I could like go look at, but I didn't know how to do it. I had no idea.
And you said, sure.
I said, heck yeah, I do. And I was running on a Mac that was not fast. I mean, it was decent, but it was not fast enough to do video. So it was taking me forever to just import and export anything at all. Like, I just figured it out. It was hard. It was really hard. And in some ways, it was like starting over, like creating your own business. It was, because I had no income. I had to build a whole clientele. Luckily, I had some connections with realtors already that existed. But, you know, It was totally me by myself.
It was. I remember the early days. You bought your first camera and you were talking about it. And it's hard when you do that because you doubt yourself. Like, and I doubt myself every day. Even when I was in the beginning, what I was doing, I was like, God, am I crazy? And I feel like we're very lucky because you guys have been there for me. Dad and I have been there we have a very supportive group, very supportive circle. Because there's days where you're like, I'm quitting, and you got somebody that says, and you need to talk to them. They're like, I just can't do this. And you say, yeah, you can.
There's this great graphic online of like, it's labeled, the top is like the entrepreneurial journey. And
oh, I know what you're talking about.
It's like this line that goes and it's like peak success. And then it's like you spiral down into anxiety and you spiral down into like failure, doubt, big win, loss. I mean, it is totally a roller coaster. It's cliche to say, but There are, I mean, even yesterday, there's an afternoon every week that I spend where I go through just the financials of everything, and I do the taxes, and I talk to the bookkeeper, and I make sure all the rents are getting paid and just everything. And that just takes it out of me so bad. And that's just one of those points. Yeah. I was even at that point yesterday where I was like, I just don't know. I don't know. This is just awful, this part of it. And you just got to coast through that time mm-hmm. and those feelings and the winds do propel you forward. And I don't know, you have to really try not to get forgetful of where you've come in that journey, because I look around me and I'm so numb to the fact that we have like these investment properties and even multifamily. People would probably say that's like a successful place to be, but it's just so mundanely everyday to me that I forget that
how special it is.
It is special.
True.
It's a total opportunity.
To a T, that's how I am. People don't give themselves enough credit. They really don't. But so you started that business, you've grown your clientele, you're in year two, you're making as much money as you were the first year you were selling real estate.
Yeah.
Are you happier that you went this path?
Well, let me tell you what, my life was like before. I definitely had, it's just like you with sales. It demands a lot of you, and it can burn. I mean, you're an extrovert. You're way more like on than I am. It actually takes energy for me to be in a group of people, and like, it feels like more of a performance than, you know, comes naturally.
Right.
But and it doesn't energize me. I feel way less stressed now. I love that I can just go to different houses around, throw in my AirPods, get the job done and go home. And then I don't have people needing me for various emergencies, issues, negotiations throughout the night. That's been really nice. It definitely matches more my...
Fine.
Where I am now in life, and I'm okay with it. I have my license still, and I may at some point dabble in going back, but I don't really have plans to. I think that the way that the Airbnb business and the rental business has just grown, I think truly within the next year and a half to 2 years, I think I will probably be full time. It's just like we were talking about earlier. I don't even know how this is going to play out and benefit me later on. I know that there's like a reason or rhyme to it, in a way that it's going to really click and make sense when you look back and go, oh, that's why that's yep. makes sense that I was in that and that turned into this. But yeah, it's good. It's good for me.
It's been a roller coaster, and I remember the early days, and I see where you are now, and it's proud of you. It's good. Yeah. It's pretty awesome. So there is a reason why you've done that business and it's paying off, because you touched on it a little bit, but with the Airbnb, I'm going back here. We talked about, oh, you gotta, you know, how the business works and how it's different from long-term rentals, but there's a way to do an Airbnb. There's ways to do Airbnb, and then there's the right way to do Airbnb, and the skills that you have acquired throughout your life, clearly, from being a creative writer, you doing that as your major at UNI, to taking pictures of real estate and doing it very well, it is serving you major in being an Airbnb host.
Yeah.
Because your pictures are phenomenal. They are way better than all the competition, majority of the competition out there. And the description of...
Properties.
The property, the listing is phenomenal.
Everything down to the messaging that the guest gets, the guidebook that they see when they come into the property, it's all thought through.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's all that stuff. You have all those skills you've accumulated, and it's working right now. But I get it. There's probably more to it than just that. But I'm just saying right there is.
There are so many things in this. I don't care what you do. I don't care what job you have. But there is a difference. The difference between the people that are successful and the people that are just get by is things that are done with excellence.
This podcast, it's attention to detail.
Oh, gosh.
And editing is every little thing matters.
Yeah, it does.
Every little thing matters.
And it will hone you. It'll about break you, but it'll hone you.
Yeah.
And but so much of life is that way. If you are willing to put in the time to get good at something, not just get to where you can do it, but get to where you can do it with excellence, it'll pay dividends.
Yeah, and I'd say the three things that, if you want to be successful, the three things that like you need to get there, I think, is that right there. Whatever you do, try to do it the best of your ability, no matter how shitty the job is. And I don't care what you do. It's just like you said with the pictures or and real estate, you know, sitting there doing all the numbers, you hate that part. Mm-hmm. Us going loading pigs at 3 a.m. in the morning, I don't love that part of the job. There's right. parts of every job, every business that you do, there's going to be parts that suck. But doing those still, trying to do them the best you can and never quitting. I don't care if Clay and I had, if we could have a setback and they could, I don't know, something really bad could happen. And I think we'd still say, we know this is
gotta
the way
keep
to
going.
Go. This is the way to go. We're going to make it work. We're going to figure it out. And you might call us crazy for that, but it's the truth. You don't give up and then don't make the same mistake twice.
Lord. I want to say number four or five. I don't know which one this is, but
that's three.
I think it was three, fine. But it doesn't matter. I think taking the leap is the
oh,
hugest.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
This hugest, is the moral.
And I'm not even talking about like going buying a piece of real estate. I just mean
taking the leap and betting on yourself. I mean, think about all the times that in this podcast you've said, we've all done it.
Yep.
Buying the first property, not knowing what the hell the furnace was, you know, not knowing that.
Calling the realtor.
Yeah, absolutely. That's what I was saying. Taking the leap, even though you don't have all the information. I mean, there's a difference between risk and calculated risk. Always calculate your risk to the best of your ability, but there's always going to be unknowns that you don't have. And that's okay. When you go to start something or do something or try something new, you're not going to have all of the information to be good at it right away. But you can figure it out. There's this great podcast. I think it's Bigger Pockets. They talk about this. Mm-hmm. And this guy has to try to sell a truck with a title, a loan on it. And he doesn't know how. And he's like, well, I do know how to vacuum a car and I know how to wash a car. So that's what I'll start with. Yep. So he vacuums his car and he washes his car. And then he says, oh, well, I do know how to take a picture with my phone. So then he takes a picture of the car. And then he's like, well, I do know how to use Facebook. So then he gets on Facebook and he lists it. And then somebody messages him. And he's like, I do know how to look up what a car's worth. He looks it up, gets messages. I know how to respond to a message. They meet. And then he's like, well, I guess I know how to call the bank. So he calls the bank and asks them how it works. And he sells his car. Life is that way. You don't have to know steps 1 through 25. You just need to know step one and you can get through step one and then
it'll lead you to two.
What step two is. And that's, I think people get so overwhelmed. I even do that because I think, oh, well, if we expand this business into Arizona or wherever the heck we're going to go, well, how's this going to this? And I got to find out all this. No, you just literally one step at a time. And if something is supposed to happen for you, that right situation or chance or person will align and come in mm-hmm. to help you and make it work.
And the beautiful thing in the time that we live in now is there's more evidence that you can do it
than ever
before. There are people from your same background that have struggled more than you have struggled that have made it and made it very big. And they're regular people that just never quit, stuck to their guns, figured it out, bet on themselves, and they will say the same stuff. They will say the same stuff. They're not Elon Musk. There's few people in the world that are true geniuses that, right. Yes, you will not be Elon Musk. You will not be LeBron James or Michael Jordan, whoever. You're not going to be Tom Brady. I mean, you might, if the next Tom Brady's listening, good luck to you. But, you know, most people aren't. But that's how most successful people are. They right. just do something, do it right, learn from their mistakes, never quit, bet on themselves, don't know the steps, but they're going to figure it out.
And where you can, where you have control, cut out people in your life who aren't going to help you get on that path and lead you down. They don't have to be the most knowledgeable person, but having positive people around is just so
positivity's
underrated.
Biggest thing.
It's so underrated because if you're having that part in the entrepreneurial journey where you're like melting down, which is definitely a part of it, and you're surrounded by people who don't support you and have your back, they're going to tell you to quit. And when you have a personal trainer and you're in there lifting the fucking heavy weight, you don't want the trainer to tell you to quit.
Right.
You want them to tell you to push through it.
Yeah.
And you do. And that's the kind of person you want in your life. Like I said, it's a 25, there's like 25 steps in, you know, to get to anywhere. And right. I don't know what it's going to look like when I get to step 20 through 25, but I know I enjoy Airbnb. That brings me positivity and positive energy. It sounds kind of woo-woo, but it does energize me. So I'm going to pursue down that path and keep doing it until that changes, or it's managed by someone who I can have the freedom to do something else. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I think if I just had all the time in the world, I'd probably focus on some music stuff and some
writing
stuff. But then also, I'm like Sawyer in that, and probably you too, Dad, that building is just fun.
Building just is fun.
Building something is, and there's no feeling like it.
You know, if you, I can see getting to like 25 years from now and really kind of having made something of ourselves with the Airbnbs or whatever it is, like, you know, and then having really just that opportunity to do something that either is philanthropically positive for other people in the world, or just something that really energizes me. Like Sawyer always talks about doing just a steakhouse just for the hell of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's like your kind of like greener pastures.
Yeah, it's one of those things that I'd like to do.
I don't know what my steakhouse is for sure, but I think I'll probably have a better idea when the option is there to do it, you know? So
yeah,
I think just keeping on growing as much as we can.
My thing is, there might be a point where we stop investing in real estate, but it's something that it's just time. It's something that's timeless that you could continue to do, and tax purposes and everything. I mean, it's just fun. It's fun to do, and building's fun.
It's fun till it's not.
Right.
Then it's hell.
Right.
Then it's fun again.
Right. Yeah. Well, it's the journey. It's a journey. Yeah. So and
If I get good enough at it and I have enough to provide people, I'd like to do a book, but, and I work on various stuff, various projects all the time, but, at some point.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's good. That's our little time capsule. So we can look back on
that. Yeah, that's right. Yeah,
keep ourselves accountable there.
Yep. Buy more real estate. That is the long-term goal for now. Then we'll figure it out from there. My camera is shut off, so Dad, close it up.
Yeah, when we run long enough, we start having technical issues. So one of the camera feeds stops. So we're gonna hang it up for today.
If you have a special lady friend and you want to do a nice weekend in Southeast Iowa, Airbnb, the Sunshine Bungalow in Washington, Iowa.
There you go. Or
what? Well,
we could.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we're opening another Airbnb this summer. Watch out for it. It's going to be an amazing old house. There was a political figure that lived there who's sort of prominent in Iowa.
Yep.
And it's going to be at least 10 people, maybe 14 people will be able to fit in there. So if you have a big group family thing that you want to do, we're putting our heart and soul into this thing. So,
it's a neat property.
Well, maybe, I don't know how we're going to plug it later, but it's coming.